honor, but unlike her brother, she's not a soap maker. I first found Lisa's blog, actually, where she writes about tips on living green. So she's a wife, mother of three young kids, and she spends her day doing what it takes to keep a family and household running. She says that she can usually be found in the kitchen, but she also gardens, quilts, crochets, makes paper airplanes and Play-Doh, untangles parachute men, builds forts, and teaches basic tree climbing. She's active in her own Mothers of Preschoolers group and her church and her kids' schools. She writes about living green on her blog, Going Green with a Bronner Mom, and she is here to share some wisdom with us about shopping with our eyes towards the world. So welcome Lisa Bronner with me.
Thank you, Michelle. I am so glad to be here. I love mops, and this is like home for me. I've been in my mops group over in Escondido for 10 years now, and my mops journey started when I moved to Valley Center from North Carolina, and Valley Center felt like the end of the world. I had an 18-month-old, and I was pregnant with my second. I knew nobody in the area except my extended family, which you just heard. I have no sisters, only brothers, so that's not so helpful. And I was alone. I made it to one MOPS meeting before I had my son early. I knew nobody, but all of these women showed up way out in Valley Center with meals for 2 weeks, and I just fell in love. So I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be part of MOPS. I'm glad you all are here. This is definitely where you need to be. So my involvement with Dr. Bronner's isn't quite as obvious as it may seem like it should be. My grandfather started the company and set it up in Escondido, but my family wasn't terribly involved with it growing up. It wasn't on the radar for any of us, but family circumstances are what they are, and my grandfather passed away, my dad passed away a year after that, and suddenly in our early 20s, it was my brothers and me. And so my oldest brother was in a position to come and take over the company, which was rather small at the time, and a couple years later, my other brother moved back from Japan and started helping out, and then several years after that, my husband and I came back from North Carolina and got involved in it as well. However, I had two kids at the time. I've had a third since. And so as a stay-at-home mom, I have no interest in being in the office. And my brother asked me, you know, we get a lot of customer questions. We get a lot of uncertainty and confusion out there. We probably have the most vocal customer base of any company I have ever known. I mean, they ask us anything, and some things I am so not qualified to answer, that the little boy saying, you know, you need to say I don't know, because there are a lot of times I just don't know. But that was something I could do from home. And so I started answering questions, the flood of questions that we get via email, and then there were so many repeat questions that were like, okay, let's just put them up on a blog, and hopefully that will help people and sort of save me some time. So the Going Green with the Bronner Mom blog started, and here I am. So shopping with a global perspective is so interconnected. The world is getting smaller and smaller. We are, and with our communication, with our travel, with the media, we are finding out more and more about parts of the world that just were kind of in the dark to us here. But with that knowledge comes responsibility and a bit of a burden. We as moms do a lot of the shopping, not only, you know, we're a big sector of the shopping part of our country, but I mean, in our families, we probably do the most of the shopping if you count the food and the clothing part of it. So we have a lot of decisions to make, and sometimes it would just be easier if we didn't know some of the things we know, because when you know things, you've got to do something about them. So there's two different aspects, I feel, to shopping with a global perspective. One of them is the environmental aspect, caring for our physical world The other is a humanitarian aspect, caring for the people who are making the products we're buying, growing the products we're buying, shipping them, people who are involved all along the way. So within these two segments, the environmental aspect and the humanitarian aspect, there's a good bit going on. I also feel that this is a biblically based idea of caring about what we buy and caring for our world in general. When God set Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, one of the first things he told them to do was to cultivate it and to keep it. That meant to improve it. To cultivate is to improve a soil so that it's useful, not to destroy it. And so we have that earliest of mandates that God gave us. Secondly, from a humanitarian side, in Proverbs, he says, the righteous is concerned for the rights of the poor, but the wicked doesn't understand that concern. And that is true as well. And you know that in a global sense, we are wealthy, regardless of our situation here, in comparison to the rest of the world. But with that wealth comes responsibility. So what do you do about it? So let's start with the environmental. Now, there are a lot of reasons to look at buying organic. It is healthier for our bodies, healthier for our families, and honestly, that's probably the most compelling reason for us as mothers of young children. However, it's also better for the environment, because organic does mean fewer pesticides, fewer petrochemicals, more sustainable farming practices that build up the soil rather than tearing it down. And so beyond the concern we have for our household, there's a lot of concern for the world in general. For example, you might be familiar with the Dirty Dozen list that was published by the Environmental Working Group of the top 12 fruits and vegetables that you really should buy organic. And those are great. The reason they make that list is because they're generally things that are either hard to wash or we eat the whole thing, as well as there's just a lot of chemicals needed to raise them conventionally. However, so for us, the Dirty Dozen kind of covers a lot of health, lettuce, strawberries, thin-skinned fruits, all that good stuff. However, it doesn't impact at all the growers, because even if we're talking about something like bananas, something that's we do not eat the peel, it's really thick, the pesticides do not penetrate to bananas, and for our health and safety, there's not a whole lot of reason to buy organic bananas, unless, you know, you just want to be complete, that's great. However, that doesn't help the people who grow conventional bananas. Because if you think about bananas, for example, to spray a banana tree, you're going to have to spray about 15 feet in the air, and that's how tall they are on average. And so anybody that's in that area is going to be hit with a spray as well, including, of course, the sprayer. And so if you want to think about purchasing things with concern for the people who are growing them, going beyond even the Dirty Dozen becomes a priority. So how do you know about organic? Organic, as with any good movement, there gets to be a lot of bad things attached to it. And in the 90s, when organic started to become the thing, we had a lot of people using the word and tossing it around, and it was in danger of losing its meaning. It was in danger of going the way of the word natural. The word natural has no meaning whatsoever. There is nobody in the marketplace that has given a definition to the word natural. It means nothing. There might as well be a blank space on a box if it says the word natural. And the word organic was in danger of going the same way. And so in the 90s for food, the USDA got involved and set up some organic standards for food. And that was very, very helpful. It, however, unfortunately, does not apply to personal care products unless they decide to pursue the food certification. Dr. Bronner's, our company that makes soap, we have pursued the food certification because there's just nothing else that really has any meaning. So when you see this logo, the USDA organic logo, that is very helpful. It means that it really has undergone a rigorous analysis, third-party outside certification, And it means what you hope it means, that it was raised sustainably, lack of pesticides, lack of GMOs, lack of petrochemical fertilizers, all of that good stuff. So that is a logo that is very helpful in food manufacturing. This is a newer one, the NSF. NSF actually stands for National Sanitation Foundation, but nonetheless, it does apply to personal care and cosmetics. It's new, and it's still kind of evolving. So, but that's something you can start to look for as well. You might see the USDA organic seal on cosmetics, but you honestly can't really limit yourself to only buying USDA certified organic cosmetics, because there's just not that many out there. So organic labeling, though, is still a quagmire. So as soon as we said, okay, we've got this label, well, then you have companies that say, okay, well, how organic does it have to be? Well, so here's what we ended up with. We have these four segments of how organic does it have to be called organic. If it's 100% organic, it can say 100% organic. And that's great. That's like, you know, gold status there. If it is 95 to 100% organic, it can have the word organic and not say 100% organic. And it also can't contain petrochemicals, so that's helpful. If it's 70 to 95% organic, it can use the phrase made with organic whatever. So for example, again, this isn't food, but it's the same standard. This is Dr. Bronner's soap. This is our Peppermint Castile original soap. It says made with organic oils. It falls within the 70 to 95% category. The reason for that is that it contains water, which can't be organic because it's not a botanical, and it contains salt. So anyhow, made with organic, that's a good one. If it's less than 70% organic ingredients, it cannot have a front label claim. So in the ingredient list, you may see, organic ingredient, but there can't be a front label claim. This just seems a lot more difficult than it should be, but when we come to marketing and packaging, you just have to specify everything to make sure that things mean what you hope they mean. So we came upon, when this organic movement started, we came upon something called greenwashing, is what my brother coined the term. And it's the idea of making things look greener than they are. People would use the word organic in their company name. But the products that they made were not organic. So you have a company like Goddess Garden Organics. They make sunscreen. Sunscreen cannot be organic. It is mineral or chemical. Neither of those are organicable because they're not they're not a botanical. It has to be grown. So organic sunscreen is impossible. It could contain organic aloe vera, organic ingredient, but the active ingredient in sunscreen cannot be organic. So you have a company that, well, that sounds organic, but the product is not organic. There was a company called Dr. Organics. They made a bottle that looked awfully like Dr. Bronner's. It was called Dr. Organics, and they made a Castile soap, but the Castile soap was not organic. However, there's the clear implication that if it's an organic named company, that the product is. So you have to just be really big detectives there. And then you have the term natural. Natural is... You know, that one really got us off topic, because, here we go. Okay, natural. Not only natural, but then the nice, you know, the brown packaging, it's usually kind of dull, you know, it might have some green on there. It might even be boxed like in a cardboard box with no ink on it. This is actually dog food, but it just got me. The other day I was shopping for, I couldn't make it over to Costco where I usually get my dog's dog food, and I had to get some at Target. And this just made me laugh, because really, there's two things on there that tell me nothing. One is a brown bag. They're trying to convince me that it's natural because it's in a brown bag, and it does say natural dog food. Well, one would hope your dog food would be natural. I mean, what else would it be? But it doesn't really tell me a thing. So, and then, you know, the They're definitely hoping to convince you that your potato chips are healthful because they use the word natural, which again, you would hope they would be, and they're in a brown bag. And the bag is kind of dull, like it doesn't have a shiny coating on it. Don't be fooled. That means absolutely nothing whatsoever. Okay, so now here's the thing. What if you find a great organic source for the food you want to buy, but it's coming from France? It's coming from the Philippines. It is taking a tremendous amount of petrochemicals to get to you. Well, how is that shopping with a global perspective? Because yes, the food is well-raised, but it's leaving what we call a huge carbon footprint to get to you. So what if you can find that food conventionally, but closer, so that you save on the transportation issues, but you don't know so much about how it was raised? This is where it gets to be a quagmire and where I can't really give you do this and not this. Well, do this here, don't do this here. So you have to decide where you're going to go. Ideally, organic and local. That is great. And here in Southern California, we have a ton of organic and local. It's fabulous. But that's not always the case. So the ideal is organic and local. We have the CSAs, which are fabulous. Highly recommend CSAs, the community-supported agriculture, where you get your box of vegetables every week. You're supporting a local farm. They may even be certified organic. But even if they're not, you can like go and look at their farm. It's fabulous, because some places are too small to get certification. Certification is expensive. So, but if they're transparent and you can see their practices, that's also very, very good. Getting your meats from local sources. Once again, we live in Southern California. We have so many good sources for grass-fed, pasture-raised meats and eggs and such like that. Of course, as I was driving here, I thought of so many more resources I could have put on your sheet there. If you're looking for resources for local and organic, some of the big CSAs are JR Organics. They deliver to farmers markets in the area and to houses. Bee-Wise Organics, and there's tons of smaller ones. In a minute, I'm going to have you guys tell each other what you know, because you know a lot, and that's your best resource. For meats, there's J&J Grass-Fed Beef. They deliver. There's Primal Pastures. They have chicken, hogs, eggs, honey. They're up in Temecula. They deliver. Fabulous tour as well. Totally transparent on their farming practices. And that's great, too. So let's see here. Okay, that's fair trade. Oops, we'll talk about fair trade in a minute. Okay, so the environmental aspect of shopping with a global perspective goes beyond what we think of for our houses. The humanitarian aspect, this one's newer. So organics is great. Organics tells us a lot about how our food was raised. It tells us absolutely nothing about who raised it and how they were treated. So you can have food that is beautifully organic, grown in circumstances that, yay, we're all behind. However, the people who grew it are paid nothing, and they live in slums. They're not treated well. They could even be children. There is nothing about the labor included in the organic standard. And that was where it fell short. Now, it was good. It was a good, you know, level to reach. We saved the term. It means something now. But there was this big lapse. It also failed to address the issue of animal welfare. So the animals are not given antibiotics, they're not given hormones, but it still doesn't address their welfare. Chickens could still be in battery cages, which are the stacked up cages that we passed that law a couple years ago. They have to be able to flap their wings, but their beaks could still be clipped. They could still live in the cage their whole life, no access to air. There's no animal welfare component to the organic issue. So that's where we ended up with this term, fair trade. Fair trade's a little bit newer. I would say within the last decade, we've come out with this new standard that we're going for. I'm going to warn you, you cannot leave here saying I'm going to buy everything fair trade. It's just not that widespread yet. But look for it. So fair trade is a standard that addresses a humanitarian component. When you find a product that is certified fair trade, you're supporting, and I have a list here, Direct trading relationship. So that means fewer distributors, fewer in-between people. You're actually going to be supporting the farmers or the people raising the animals themselves. Prompt payment of fair wages, fair for the area. No child labor, no forced labor, or otherwise exploited labor. The workplace non-discrimination, gender equity, and freedom of association. You're also investing in community development projects, environmental sustainability, traceability, and transparency. Safe working conditions and reasonable working hours. And you think, wow, yeah, that's all normal. Yeah, that's normal for America. But as we get to be a more global marketplace, it's not the norm. The people who certify fair trade, they're like relentless. My husband is in charge of this at Dr. Bronner's, and he hates those days because they ask about everything. But it's good. We want those questions to be asked. You know, they want to see the rest areas. They want to see if we have a nursing mother's room. They want to see how we're treating our people. And that is great. If I can convince you to buy one thing fair trade today, it will be chocolate. Chocolate is insane in how it has just become this nightmare around the world. It's been one of the first things to go fair trade because the need for it is so desperate. The chocolate that comes from West Africa, 40% of it is raised by child slave labor, children ages 11 through 16, who have been lured, kidnapped, sold by family, maybe have been promised a better life, higher education at all. It's horrendous. As more journalists have been able to pull information out, the countries where this happens have become more closed, and so it's been harder to get information out. Therefore, the people that have pursued the fair trade certification in chocolate, equal exchange, green and blacks, it means a lot. It means that it's not children and especially not slavery. You think, wow, we got over that one. Well, we got over that one a little bit, mostly here in America, but it's still very much an issue. So this is equal exchange. It's fortunately now a very widespread brand. You can find it in most stores, but definitely in, you know, your Trader Joe's, Whole Foods, Jimbo's. And you want to look for the certification logo on it. Other actions to do there on that particular issue is I would write to Hershey's, to Mars, to the biggest chocolate companies that we have, Nestle, and let them know that they need to be finding a different source for their chocolate. The other thing regarding fair trade that I love and that is great is that you can be making a difference in situations around the world by what you buy. Because part of fair trade is having a community investment component. You're required to keep a fund of 10% of your profit that is earmarked for community development. And I absolutely love this component of fair trade. So not only are you helping the specific worker that grows whatever, but you are helping the people in their community and in their family. I had the opportunity this past summer to travel to Sri Lanka, and I've not been very far in my life. I've been to France once. But Sri Lanka, I had to look that one up. It's a 12 and a half hour time change. It's off the southern tip of India. And this is where our coconut oil comes from that we use in our soaps and that Dr. Bronner's now sells as a food in itself. And so my husband and I had need to go there. He does a lot of business with them. And it was amazing. It was amazing. So I got to see firsthand what the fair trade looks like there, the coconut oil certified fair trade. So this is an example of one project that the fair trade fund helped. This looks really beautiful. You know, I love the color green. We don't get it. We have it right now in Valley Center. It's beautiful, but you know, it's kind of a new thing for me. However, this is a problem in Sri Lanka because this is supposed to be a lake. It's supposed to be a tank, and the plants in it are consuming over half of the water that should be in these. Sri Lanka, their major crop is rice. They also grow tea. and they have the most complex system of irrigation canals I have ever seen. It is millennia old, absolutely phenomenal. It's a very mountainous country, and they have set up these, they call them tanks, we would call them reservoirs, that they flow down into each other. The different sides of the island have different rainy seasons, so they keep each other supplied. It's really beautiful. However, during World War II, when Sri Lanka was a British colony, there was fear that the country would be bombed, and so they decided to disguise all of the tanks by planting this invasive water lily, water hyacinth, in the tanks, and it worked in the sense that it certainly covered over the tanks, although nobody knows that it actually tricked any enemy planes into landing there. That was the idea. They wanted to trick the planes to landing in the water. They didn't clean it up afterwards. So all of these tanks in Sri Lanka are completely covered over with these water hyacinths so that they can only grow one crop of rice a year when they used to be able to grow two. I mean, that's cutting their rice crops in half. Not only can they not sell it to other countries and make a profit there, but they don't even have enough rice for their own people. So this has been a big problem. So Dr. Bronner's, in its fair trade fund there, has gone in and cleaned up the tank one at a time. And there are thousands of tanks, but paid for the backhoes and the labor to clean up these tanks so that the farmers around the area have the availability to plant two crops of rice a year. Now, this doesn't directly benefit Dr. Bronner's. We don't use rice, but once again, it definitely benefits the community. Another tank was being dedicated when we were there, and we got to be there for the ceremony that they have. I love the language. It's called Sinhala, and it's a swirly language, and then the middle one is Tamil, which is a secondary language there, and then, of course, English as a British colony. So the tank cleaning project of Mahawiwa Lake at Udiwala, Handid, handed over to the community on the 16th of July, 2014. Absolutely amazing. Fair trade program of Surrendipal, which is the name of our coconut operation there. Another example of what fair trade does for people, we got to visit this foster home. I never think of myself as that tall, but I sure was taller than this teacher. So this was a home for girls, and just like in the United States, you reach 18, you graduate, you're out. That leaves these girls with very few employable skills. So the Fair Trade Fund was able to pay for the salary of an instructor and 12 industrial-grade sewing machines to teach girls there how to sew so they can leave the home with an employable skill. They were amazing. So these things are from my trip there. This is their handwork, so they're taught both handwork and machine work. And this is a pair of pajamas that that one of the girls had made. They were just getting ready for an exhibition, so we came on a good day, got to see all of their work. But it's wonderful to see how what we buy in our stores, this nice, jar of coconut oil, this bottle of soap, whatever, these are affecting individual people, like people I met and people I saw, and they're not different from us at all. Our languages may differ, our religions may differ, but mothers of families, we're the same, and it's just great to be able to help them with what we buy. I don't know how these got out of order. There we go. Okay, so certifications related to fair trade, related to the humanitarian and animal welfare aspect here. Fair for Life is probably the most common certification you're going to see. You'll see that little logo should be on the front of a fair trade product. Food Justice Certified, you don't see that very often. That's really hard to get, but a good one too. These two bottom ones have to do with animal welfare, certified humane, animal welfare approved. These things came on board in the last 2 years. You're not going to see them too much because they're expensive to get. However, if you know where your meat is coming from and you can ask questions, that's great. A company that is transparent is good because if they will answer your questions, or better yet, put the information out there even before you ask, then that's a sign that they're paying attention and they're not trying to hide something. A company that doesn't answer your questions, or, you know, gives you some sort of runaround, or, you know, says, oh, look over there, we're doing good stuff here, but not answering your question about this issue over here, you know, that's a red flag. You want to pay attention there. So as we, you know, go out and we spend our money, we're making votes with our dollars. We're voting to support this business and not that one. We're voting to support this practice and not that one. So think about that. However, you cannot leave here today bound and determined not to buy another thing unless it's organic and or fair trade, because you're going to sink the ship before it sails. You're going to be so stressed out and frustrated by Monday that you're just going to throw the whole thing out. But if you could maybe make one decision, say, okay, we're gonna focus here on, you know, on meat or on chocolate or coffee, then get used to that, get comfortable with that, get acclimated to it, and then next month take on another thing. And after a year goes by, you'll look back and you'll see that you really have come a long way in shopping with a broader perspective for, you know, for what we need, feel like we need. I was telling my kids about the chocolate thing this morning. My kids are now 11, 9, and 5. Yes, 5. It means I graduate from MOPS at the end of this year, and they kick me out. But I was telling them about the chocolate. And there was a loud silence, I have to say, because my boys, my 9 and 11-year-olds, they're pretty used to this rhetoric. I've been in Dr. Bronner's, and they've been in our booths and the conventions and such, and they know what's going on, but they also love chocolate. So, you know, to tie it to, well, what's really going on, you know, once again, with knowledge comes responsibility. I don't think they wanted to know that, but I think they needed to. So anyhow, thank you very much. If you have any questions, please feel free to ask. I have my postcard up here. It has my website. I don't know if it has my email address. Oh, I gave you my email address. Yes, feel free to email me. Thank you very much.